Welcome into the latest episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, July 19. This week, we examined an article from the June issue of the Journal Oncology, and it was titled Second Line Therapies in the Changing Landscape of First Line Therapies for Metastatic Clear Cell Renal Cell Carcinoma. I spoke with one of the authors, Dr. Robert Figlin. He's a professor of medicine and biomedical sciences at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, California, and the Steven Spielberg Family Chair in Hematology Oncology and the Deputy Director of Cedars-Sinai Cancer in the Cancer Institute. We spoke about the evolving treatment paradigm of metastatic clear cell RCC, really specifically how the shifting landscape of first-line therapies has impacted second-line therapeutic strategies. Dr. Figlin also touched on different ideas, including checkpoint inhibitors, TKIs, immunotherapies, and plenty more for the treatment of this disease. Dr. Figlin, thank you so much for hopping on the pod to speak with me. For anyone who's not familiar, would you mind introducing yourself and the piece you produced for the Journal Oncology with a couple of your colleagues?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I'm Bob Figlin, a professor of medicine and biomedical sciences at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, and I'm the Steven Spielberg Family Chair in Hematology Oncology and Deputy Director of Cedars-Sinai Cancer in the Cancer Institute.
Great. And so talk to me a little bit about the background of first-line therapies for patients with metastatic clear cell RCC. So you and your colleagues wrote this nice piece for the Journal Oncology, publishing in the June issue, kind of examining second-line therapies and first-line therapies for metastatic clear cell RCC. Could you just provide a background on the first line to begin with?
Yeah, of course. So I think the world of kidney cancer therapeutics continues to evolve rapidly. And over the last 3+ years, we now have a series of randomized level one evidenced pivotal trials comparing either immunotherapy combined with immunotherapy or immunotherapy combined with a tyrosine kinase inhibitor in advanced metastatic clear cell RCC that have resulted in multiple FDA approvals. And we're now starting to piece together the difficult task of how one differentiates randomized pivotal trials, which in and of themselves were each positive, but have not been compared with each other. So while we know that ipi-nivo, for example, has been compared to sunitinib, and we know that pembroaxi, nivolumab, cabozantinib, and pembrolenvatinib all are combinations which are clinically active, have important endpoints that have been met, which we can describe, making the options for kidney cancer patients that much greater and making the challenge for kidney cancer physicians that much more difficult because none of these combinations have been compared to each other. And then, as we'll talk about, to confound that, then the question then becomes, what do we do for patients if they don't benefit from this first-line therapy? And that's what the article was focusing on.
Right. And so let's jump right into some of the specifics with those first-line therapies. You know, what did you and your colleagues see and really examine that kind of, you know, really drove the main topic of your article?
Yeah, so the article was really focused on second-line therapy.
Right.
But you had to understand what the first line treatment options were in order to design and understand the challenge associated with second line treatment. For example, in the first line setting, we generally talk about good, intermediate, and poor prognosis patients using any of the typical characteristics that we think about, most recently, the International Metastatic Database. And we recognize that for intermediate and poor prognosis patients, across all of the four choices that I've mentioned, there's clear and unequivocal evidence for improvement in objective response rate, mostly progression-free survival, but most importantly, overall survival. The toxicities differ. And doctors basically are choosing among them based upon their own comfort level with delivering these therapies. In the favorable group, we have the added challenge where we think that while combination therapy with IOIO or IOTKI can be used, the data is not as strong with respect to long-term outcomes. Recent data, for example, with pembroaxi shows that the overall survival may not be as robust as one had thought in the intermediate evaluation. So the question really becomes in the good risk patient, whether there is still a role for selected patients for a TKI or for selected patients, either IOIO or IOTKI. And then it was with that background that my colleagues and I then started to address, well, what do you do next if those are ineffective or not tolerated?
Right. And you and your colleagues kind of talk about this, I guess we could call it a shift in care in the first line setting with single agent TKIs really being phased out with the advent of immune checkpoint inhibitors. So first, to kind of touch on what have you seen with that and what kind of reasoning was there for that change, and really focusing on what kind of domino effect has that had on subsequent therapies?
Sure. Well, unequivocally, IOIO or IOTKI have superior outcomes when compared to a single agent TKI like sunitinib.
Right.
And that has basically changed in a very rapid fashion the treatment choices for doctors. Almost all patients in 2021 and beyond should be receiving an IO in combination or an IOTKI in combination as their first line regimen. The only exceptions to that would be for people with comorbid disease, people that may have a risk tolerance that's not acceptable, or people where you think a single agent TKI might be used holding off an IO for second line therapy. But for the overwhelming majority of patients, it's an IO containing regimen in the frontline setting. What does that mean? It means that while we hope that many patients will have durable remissions as a result of this therapy, and we look at what's called the tail of the curve or the flattening of the curve of survival to see whether some of these can be out for 2, 3, and 4 years with unmaintained remissions. But then for the remainder of the patients, once they progress on that frontline treatment, what do we do? And unlike in the frontline treatment, we do not have robust clinical level one evidence data sets to support what to do next after prior IOIO or IOTKI therapy. So what are we left with? What we shared in the article was, well, with people receiving ipi-nivo, for example, who've never had a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, knowing that the tyrosine kinase inhibitor is still an agent that has important biologic activity in this HIF and VEGF-driven disease, drugs like cabozantinib or axitinib would be totally appropriate. Or agents like lenvatinib, afinitor, both of which have shown robust clinical activity in the advanced disease setting, but not really post-IOIO. So it's almost as though we would say, well, in a TKI-naive patient, which is how we characterize these people. Mm-hmm. In a TKI-naive patient, we could use the TKIs from earlier in this generation of studies to support treatment. And that would be agents like cabozantinib, axitinib, or lenvatinib combined with afinitor. In contrast, what do we do, and we talked about this in the manuscript, what do we do in patients that have had an IOTKI? If they had pembroaxi, obviously, continuing an axitinib TKI makes no sense. So then opportunities for cabozantinib or lenvatinib afinitor make very good sense. In a situation like CheckMate 9ER, where a person has nivolumab and cabozantinib, a subsequent therapy should not contain cabozantinib and very well might contain something like lenvatinib afinitor. And then for a disease, for an agent like pembro-lenvatinib in the CLEAR study, subsequent therapy may very well be an agent such as cabozantinib. So what you want to do is you want to use in sequence an agent that has the patient has not been exposed to, that still has known biologic activity, has a known and acceptable toxicity profile, and the physician has the ability to deliver, hopefully, a benefit. Now, the challenge that most people would ask, which is as yet unanswered, but is in clinical trials, is, well, if a person had an IO-containing regimen in the first-line setting, shouldn't they receive an IO-containing regimen either alone or in combination in the second-line setting? And while that is aspirational from the perspective of we hope that that would be something that would be effective in the future, we don't really understand all that much about IO resistance. We don't yet have sufficient high-level evidence of IO post-IO to support that. And I think in my own practice and what I recommend for people that I see and talk to is that they not use IOs in the second-line setting after prior IOs outside of a prospective clinical trial.
And so following up with that, you mentioned that that would probably be ideal to kind of have that IO treatment. Are there any kind of prospective studies or upcoming trials that are really honing in on that idea to get that valuable data?
Absolutely. And there's a myriad of trials now trying to look at what do we do with IO TKI or TKI TKI in a post-IO population of patients. Cosmic trial, for example, but there's a whole series of those. And I think, but the answer is, do we have robust data to support the use of a checkpoint inhibitor post-progression on prior checkpoint inhibitors? I would say no, except in the following situation. We're now starting to see patients that have had checkpoint inhibitors in the frontline setting have had extended durable remissions that now go on 1+ years. And the question is, should you retreat with something that they benefited from before and try introduce a response? And I think the answer to that is unequivocally yes.
So kind of taking all this information that you provided and really the manuscript itself, for someone who's listening to this podcast or reading that manuscript, what would you say would sum it up to be the main takeaway of the piece?
Majority of patients in the frontline setting should receive a checkpoint inhibitor therapy in combination with other checkpoint inhibitors or a TKI. A subset of patients, though small, may still benefit in the frontline setting from a TKI, especially if it's in favorable risk patients and the patient and the doctor understand the risks and benefits of going down that path. In the second line setting, try and find a TKI that is not the same as the TKI used in the frontline setting, so that you have some benefit of additional targets of activity, MET, AXL, FGFR, with the use of lenvatinib, Afinitor, or the use of cabozantinib as an example. And lastly, try and help us get additional information and answers to questions about what is the high-level evidence role of immunotherapy post immunotherapy progression in the first line setting.
And lastly, is there anything in your opinion that we have left out in this conversation about the manuscript that's really important to share here?
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would just say is there is a target that is not yet FDA approved and a drug that's not yet FDA approved, which is what's called a HIF-2 inhibitor. This is undergoing extensive study, both in the advanced disease setting, as well as in the newly diagnosed patient with clear cell. So there are still novel classes of drugs in this setting that we're asking and answering questions about. So one should always be on the lookout for those opportunities as well.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Figlin, that's all I had for you. Thank you so much for stopping by and speaking with me about this manuscript. I really appreciate it.
Happy to be of help. Take care.
You too. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review to tell us what you want to hear more about. The Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you again next time.